Palazzo Barbaro remained the Barbaro family's exclusive domain until the defeat and subsequent impoverishment of Venice at the hands of Napoleon. As their fortune dwindled, the Barbaros withdrew into a wing of the palace and divided the rest into apartments. When the last of the Barbaros died in the middle of the 19th century, the palace was bought by a succession of speculators who stripped it of many of its paintings, hacked off carved marble figures, gathered up choice furniture and decorative items, and put them up for auction. Daniel and Arianna Curtis became its saviors. They replaced rotting timbers, repaired broken stucco, and restored frescoes and paintings. By creating their own cultural salon in the Barbaro, they even revived its humanist spirit. With the Curtises playing host to artists, writers, and musicians, Palazzo Barbaro came to be considered the most important American cultural outpost in Venice, if not in all of Italy. That was due, in part, to the profound influence of a gray eminence who remained largely behind the scenes, namely Charles Eliot Norton, one of Daniel Curtis's Harvard classmates. An early appreciator of Italian art, Norton was a friend and literary executor of John Ruskin and Thomas Carlyle, a translator of Dante's Divine Comedy, a founder of The Nation, a teacher of Bernard Berenson and Ralph Curtis, and a friend and mentor to Henry James, Isabella Stewart Gardner, and others in the Barbaro circle. It was during one of Professor Norton's lectures in January 1876 that Ralph Curtis slipped a note to a fellow student inviting him to come to the room of a friend after class. They were going to start a college humor magazine along the lines of Punch. A few weeks later, Ralph Curtis and six of his friends published the first issue of the Harvard Lampoon. Because of their obvious devotion to Palazzo Barbaro and their energetic support of artists and the arts, the Curtises inspired an outpouring of goodwill in Venice that was so deeply felt it carried over to succeeding generations. Alberto Franchetti, whose family once owned the palace next door to the Barbaro, recalled that when he was growing up, long after Daniel and Arianna had died, the Curtis family was still regarded with admiration and gratitude. "You have to understand," Franchetti said, "that they came to Venice at the lowest point in our history, when everyone was extremely poor and in despair. The Curtises were the one bright light in Venice at a very dark time. They did more than restore Palazzo Barbaro, they honored it, and for this they won the lasting affection of Venice. Today we think of the Curtises as part of our history, and for foreigners, this is a rare distinction. They are not Venetians, but we don't think of them as expatriates either. We see the Curtises as unique." There was every reason to expect that future generations of Curtises would continue to live in and safeguard the Barbaro, inheriting that same goodwill. But a problem had arisen. For the first time in over 100 years, the Curtis family was in danger of losing control of the Barbaro. The source of the trouble lay in a provision of the Napoleonic Code, which was law in Italy, namely that children shall inherit equal shares of their parents' property. That rule was thought to be more equitable than the British law of primogeniture, which allows the eldest son to inherit the entire estate. But in practical terms, the Napoleonic Code contributed to ferocious quarrels among heirs and to the breakup of large family properties. Patricia and her two siblings, Ralph and Lisa, had inherited Palazzo Barbaro in the mid-1980s. Their mother had left it to them in equal shares, as required by the code. But her will did not specify which part of the palace would belong to whom. That question was left for the three heirs to settle among themselves.